First I was a Catholic girl, loved the mass, I watched the swirl.
Hello and welcome to the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Today is Sunday morning, June 13th, 2021. I'm Larry Rhodes, your daughter five. And as usual, we have our co-host Wombat on the line with us. Hello, Wombat.
No, you see what you're doing. You're using the driver as a putter. You got to use the putter for putters and the drivers for drivers. There's the right tool for every throw.
That's true. I've never used the driver for a putter, though. But I'll take your word for it. Okay. With us today, we have Doubtfire, George Brooklyn, George 2.5, and John Richards, the John Richards. I was looking on my page for your name, and I didn't have it set up right. Anyway, Digital Free Thought Radio Hour is a talk radio show about atheism, free thought, rational thought, humanism, and the sciences. And conversely, we'll also talk about religion, religious faiths, gods, holy books, and superstition. Wombat, what do you have for us today?
Hey, if Dredd was here, we'd normally start with our invocation, but since he is currently away, or temporarily away, what I would like to start with is my favorite quick, super fast, won't take any time at all, we'll be done before you even think about it.
Too late.
Summary. Oh, it's already over. Sorry. Hash on how everyone's been doing since last week. We'll start with our own John Richards, who looks like he's in front of the Tower of London. what's the castle? Yeah. What's the castle behind you, and how you been since last time we spoke?
One of the gatehouses of Arundel Castle,
Very cool. So, how you been?
The bit in the back is the castle itself, the tall bit. Yeah.
Nice.
I've been fine. Thank you very much. No serious inconveniences to report.
No serious inconveniences, though I heard there's a story about cooking going on right now. What was going on with that?
Very often I'm required, it's my turn to cook on a Sunday. Ah. But there's one thing that did happen since we last met, which is I had a birthday. I'm not telling you how old I am, so forget that. Don't ask that question.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. It was Friday. So since I had a birthday, they cooked for me. And I had, cake and candles to blow out and stuff. And that meant that instead of having a normal Friday takeout, we had takeout last night. And we ordered too much, so we're eating it again tonight. I don't have to cook.
Fantastic. Yeah. I kind of enjoy the process of cooking, too. So if you want to cook for your birthday, I think you're old enough to go for it. You can do whatever you want. You can do whatever you want. But happy birthday. That's great to hear from you.
Thank you.
Scott, how you been, buddy? What's going on in the music scene?
Music scene is exciting right now. Today I'm going to go perform on a yacht. Shoot. Yeah, nice. out in the place called Crab Island in the Gulf of Mexico. Whoa. So it's going to be fun.
Okay, so you've been giving me some synthesizer advice on. I've been looking at a micro Korg. If you guys don't know, it's a keyboard, but it's got like basically a calculator on the top, just a bunch of buttons and knobs and dials and stuff. And I got to be honest with you, when I first heard like electronic music, it all kind of sounded the same to me. I didn't know what I was listening for. And now I realize that it's not so much like the bass music in a sense, it's more of like the tones that are being chosen, the sounds that are being crafted, and like that's the craft behind it. And now I'm gaining and appreciate it a lot more. So thanks for opening up my eyes to that. What's your set gonna be like?
I'm gonna play a few of my own tunes. It's gonna be kind of like it's gonna be an EDM. It's supposed to be an electronic dance music party. So it'll be like DJing, so I've got a little DJ set up, and then also all my equipment, like my drum machines and synths and stuff like that, I'll be playing live. And
is it a one-man show? Like, are you just
like a one-man show? Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. You got to live stream that, or at least have some sort of video record documentation of that. Help us get out.
I know that'd be great. I'm trying to get my sister to come. She's got a better phone than I do. My phone is really junky. I need to get a new phone since if I'm going to start doing this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
Okay, cool. Is your kids getting into it?
Yeah, I'm going to try to get them to come on the next one if I can. We're supposed to be doing them like every other weekend, and they want me to be there to do it. So my kids want to come along, and they can't do it today, but they want to jump in. They'll probably do it maybe next weekend, hopefully.
Sure. Yeah, if you start them now, they'd probably be your vocal gateway moving into the future. I can see
that. Maybe my little dance crew.
yeah, that's what you need. There you go.
And I had Anthony Magnabosco on Friday for my show. So I had on the weekend before last on the Exploring Epistemology show. And then I interviewed you.
Where can we get these shows, or what's a place that we can access these interviews that you're doing?
So go on YouTube, and it'll be the Borg Skeptic channel.
The Borg?
In my particular
Borg
show.
Skeptic?
Borg. Borg, like the Borg in Star Trek.
Borg. Okay, you will be assimilated.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, go to that channel on YouTube and then look for Exploring Epistemology with Scott Williamson, and that's where I'll have all my interviews, and I'll be doing SC next week with a priest, Elmo. I think we had Elmo on this show one time.
Yeah, we've had Elmo in the past before.
That's where I met him, so yeah.
Cool. Nice. George, happy.
Yes.
You look great in that sweater. It's so many different mics in your house. I think we've lost count by now. Well, how you been?
All lousy. They're all terrible.
To be honest, that's why I'm back on this. I like that one. Well, yeah, that one's pretty good.
As you all know, I've been having an awful time trying to get connected through Zoom, and I'm not sure what I did to achieve success this morning, but there was a change in one of the menus that I was presented with, so I took it, some of you know, I use the Linux operating system, and Linux is like a Tower of Babel. It's not like Microsoft or Macintosh where, you know, there's sort of one unified pipeline for everything. This is Unix is a free for all.
Yes.
And there's 2,000 versions of it, and you can go down the rabbit hole easily.
Yeah.
I've found, and so all I can say is I'm still struggling with it, and I achieved some success this morning, and I don't know what I did. And this is so maddening.
I'll give you some props.
Go ahead.
You're using Linux, maybe even Ubuntu or something like that. I can't get my mom to basically know how to end a phone call. You know, just to like
red
buttons. Like, how do I hang up? This makes no sense. It's a brick. It's a big glowing block. How do I hang up this phone? It's like, so good on you. You're leagues and above. Like, you're probably in the top percentile of most people who have computers being able to do
well, something. You see, I used to be when I lived in the Windows world. And, you know, I came at this from DOS.
Oh, you know, shoot. Yeah.
In 1984. And I have been very computer literate.
Nice.
There were in the Microsoft world, but now I'm in Linux. I'm a baby. I don't know what the hell I am doing. Yeah. You know,
it's always
very frustrating.
Command line. Is it command line or GUI?
No. I'm not using the command line. I'm just using visual interface. I use the command line when I'm in real trouble and need somebody to help me.
The shell. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Cool. Larry, you used to be a computer dude way back when, right?
Right. Programmer.
Nice. Did you ever play around with Linux? Did you have a good time with it?
Well, the only time I ever used Linux was when I got into BlackBerries, the Raspberries.
The little computers.
Yeah, the little computers are like, $100 for a kit, and you can load Linux on it and run all kinds of software. But it was basically for entertainment modules, you know, showing movies and listening to music, things like that. So I didn't really have to use cameras or microphones or anything. But it worked really well for that.
Not bad. Did you ever use the Linux kernel called the Holy Book?
No.
Do that?
Never did.
The one that says there's no command line. You just have to worship it without question.
And pray. You pray instead of using that, a
lot of praise, yes.
As long as you do that, all your files are safe. But if you don't, it's going to come and get you. It's going to come and get you.
And it'll burn all my files.
It'll burn all your files forever and ever and ever and ever and ever. Yeah. You'll suffer for all of eternity. But not if you worship it. And I think that kind of brings us into kind of what I wanted to talk about the show. I'm gonna do one quick summary of what I was up to before we jump into it. I'm getting into disc golf. Not so much like becoming like a fanatic about it, but I did do my first 18 holes or poles or whatever you want to do talk about yesterday, and it was really, really fun. I can tell you this right now, I did not expect to enjoy it. I saw a YouTube video that was like 4 hours long being like disc golf, and I'm like, I'm not watching that video.
Yeah, like, is that like frisbee golf?
It's like frisbee golf. It's exactly okay. that. And okay. I'm like, I'm not gonna watch this 4 hour long video. Next thing you know, I'm watched three of them and like my whole weekend's over. And I'm like, how did this happen? YouTube algorithm. How am I? And then next thing you know, Amazon has your shipments ready. I'm like, what do you mean my shipments ready? There's disc golfs in here. What's going on? So it's been a love affair, and I'm having some fun going outside.
Good exercise. And,
yeah. And enjoying being outdoors again since COVID. Yeah. It's been wonderful. It's been wonderful. Guys, got a chance to go outside, do it, because, you know, we've been locked up for a while. But I'm not worshiping disc golf. So I wanted to talk about a quick story from old book. I don't know if you guys heard about it, but it's called The Bible. It's kind of popular.
I've heard of it.
Yeah. Are you sure? Should I do like a rundown on it?
No, I don't think so.
No.
Okay. So there's a verse in the Bible where basically Jesus is starving himself for 40 days and 40 nights or something close to that. And Satan comes and visits him and is like, hey, Jesus, you don't have to do that. If you worship me, I will give you, basically all the kingdoms in the world and all their glory. I'll give you all those things if you just fall down and worship me. And Jesus says to him, away with you, Satan, for it is written, you shall worship the Lord your God, and him only you shall serve. Technically talking about himself too, right? Yeah. But then the devil heard that and he's like, okay, and he leaves. And then next thing you know, the angels from God come down and administer to Jesus in his ailing moment. But I thought that was a great, and I'm doing a quick disclaimer here. I don't think Satan's real. I don't think the character in that book as that's called God is a real God. And I'm suspicious even of like a lot of things that even Jesus did. I feel like he's an amalgamation of a lot of different things put together. But if you make it general, then I don't know what you're talking about. But if you're talking about that specific character in that specific story, no, I don't believe that's a real thing. But I do think that it is a great example of a supernatural being taking no for an answer and being cool with it and just disappearing. And to get that from Satan is kind of like an ironic sentiment, because here you have Satan being like, you don't want to worship me? Okay, cool. See you later. Whereas if you did that with Jehovah or like the main God, he's like, well, now let me punish you for all of eternity. And it's very scary, or not scary, but startling recognition on my part that one of them asked to be worshiped with the intent of, if you don't do it, I'm going to punish you. I need you to worship me. And the other one asked to be worshiped. And it was like, but if you don't want to, it's totally cool. I got other things to do. I'm not going to pressure you to do this. I was trying to help you out. And it brings to me two things. Why do we worship? And two, what does it say about the ability to take no for an answer? So, Larry, I'd like to highlight you first. Do you see value in the concept of worship? And as far as taking no for an answer, wouldn't that seem like what a benevolent God would do?
No, I see no real use or value in the concept of worship. I mean, you can honor things like I honor truth and scientific truth, truth in politics, truth in interpersonal relationship, but I don't, build altars to it. I don't fall down on my knees and clasp my hands together and praise it. I don't see the value in worshiping anything. It's like an over the top reaction that's undeserved.
Sorry about that. That's a great answer. And then what about the idea of like, hey, if you're a benevolent God, is it okay for you to take no for an answer? Or should you not even be asking to be worshiped in the first place? That's my two cents, but
benevolent God would, say, I want what's best for you. And if you feel that worshiping is not good for you as to grow as a person, fine. But that would be a benevolent God.
John, throw that out to you. Yeah. What would you anticipate as an answer if a benevolent God had to consider asking its creations to worship it? Would it go through the process of asking it and punishing them if they don't? Or is there something that my limited heathen mind can't comprehend at this moment?
Well, punishment doesn't sound at all benevolent to me. I think we have a contradiction right there.
Okay. You're a benevolent parent. What happened the last time you asked your kids to worship you? How about that?
I got roundly ignored, I think. But the thing is about this, I've got an old friend who's very religious, and he was brought up in one of the more obscure Christian sects, Plymouth Brethren or something like that. And the other day, I haven't seen him for some years, but I was chatting to him and I said something vaguely disrespectful towards the Christian God. And he said to me, Bend the knee.
Did he do it in an English accent? Because that'd be fantastic. I might actually do it at that point.
A Northern English accent, Liverpool.
Bend the knee.
Nice. I love it.
And I was quite astounded, really, because I hadn't seen him in that mode. And so it was quite novel for me. But worship, no. It's my feeling is that this comes about because of the context I'm going to use.
Sure.
What is frequently a theistic trick and talk about. You've got to consider it in the context.
Talk to me in context. Yeah, I'm open to context. Give me some context. Yeah. Drop some context bombs on me.
This particular religion was invented a few thousand years ago, wasn't it?
Sure. And
at the time, there was less civilization than there is
now.
And what ruling there was being done was done by force. You know, there were a few warlords with big swords, and they were the boss guys, and they insisted that you should be submissive towards them.
Right.
Or they really did punish you in some, you know, very severe way.
It was an effective system for sure.
Yes. So I suspect that since that's when these religions were created, they incorporated that scenario, that, you know, the way life was then. And if you're expected to bow down to your warlord, then surely the biggest warlord of all would expect you to worship him. That's the sort of reasoning I'm coming to here.
Well, help me out with the history. Why then do we have terms like benevolent God, or God that loves you, or God that accepts you just the way you are, or kumbaya, or, like, you know, the loving God? Like, where did this, you know, happy-go-lucky, everything's cool, but you still got to worship me, that's the fine print. Where did that God come from? Because it doesn't seem like to be the one from Old Testament or, like, black and white New Testament. Do you know about anything about that?
I think it's a marketing ploy. It's the carrot and the stick, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, when you realize that the stick doesn't work for everybody, let's throw in a few carrots. You know, this is a loving God. This one is loving God. The fact that he only loves certain people.
Yeah, you know? There's that too. There's that too.
His chosen people. And he doesn't seem to care about, for example, babies that are born with a genetic defect too much. You know, that you've got to gloss over that.
Sure. Right. Yeah. That and kids that like to correct other kids' grammar. Like, he doesn't seem to do anything to stop that from happening either. Just like the jerks of the world. He does nothing to stop the jerks of the world. Seems like a God would want to stop that. I'm also, Scott, love for you to weigh in on this too. The character of Satan is such an interesting character for me, because you could look at it at face value of Satan's the bad guy, God's the good guy, right? Like, that's what the book tells you. But in every, literally from chapter one, like, if I didn't know anything about these two characters and I have to pull facts out of a hat, the one that the fact that I pull out where it's like character A drowned all of humanity and including all the babies and impregnated a woman in Mesopotamia Bronze Age and expected her to figure out her own father situation as if that was like a suitable thing to do, or, you know, literally feeds people to lions or sacrifices his son in the most torturous way possible to forgive other people for rules that he himself created. And then you have other character A is like, told a guy to eat an apple. And I'm like, oh, I don't know. It's like, how do you tell which one's the bad guy and which one's the good guy? Like, Scott, what do you think about that as like a system or as a phenomenon of the Bible? Like, you have these two characters, good guy, bad guy, but they don't seem to match up whatsoever.
Yeah, it's so many ways you can go with that. So you can do what you call an internal critique. Okay. Of that whole story, which is you're just jumping into the worldview of the Bible. So you're kind of considering, what did the Bible writers mean? What did they, you know, what's consistent or inconsistent within the text itself? So you have to figure out, what is the text really doing here? And so part of understanding what the text is doing is to kind of understand a little bit about the historiography behind it. So I think, like, in the writers of the Bible wanted to automatically assume, you know, Yahweh or Jehovah is the good guy. So that's right off the bat. That's like a baked in assumption from the beginning. And then, so everything he does is going to be good by definition. And if you think about the historiography about it, think about what were the values of people back then. They valued people that were powerful, that could kill as many people as possible. Those were the heroes. Those kings were worshipable.
Scott, I'm going to throw something out at you. Mm-hmm. Perhaps that may not have been the prevailing opinion, but maybe just the opinion of people who had the power to distribute books. Like, I'm pretty sure women may have had a different opinion, but they simply, due to their position and caste, didn't have the opportunity to express what they wanted to see in a god. And so what we see in God is just powerful people coming up with the most powerful person, and like unempathetic people coming up with the most unempathetic supernatural being, and misogynists coming up with the most misogynist sense.
Absolutely.
Larry, what do you think?
Well, I think you landed on it when you said powerful. The Old Testament really didn't show much of a loving God. He was the powerful God. He was the creator God. He was the boss of us all God. The loving God didn't really come around until the New Testament, when Jesus was there to hype for him and say that, you know, your Father in heaven will have a home for you, and you know, he's all about love and all this stuff. But that wasn't really the message of the Old Testament.
Truth. The message of the Old Testament essentially is, you know, it's a pretty nice life you got going on here. It'd be a shame if something bad happens to it.
Right.
Like, no, I think that's the New Testament. That's the New Testament. That's the here's the Jesus story. Right. The Old Testament is just I'm doing bad
stuff. Obey. Obey or die.
Obey or die. Right. Obey or die. And then it'd be really nice if you obeyed me right now. George, does this confuse you at all? Lifelong atheist? Like the idea of like people would worship, like when you figured out who the God character was in the Bible and you're like, is this who people are worshiping? Did that ever surprise you? Or,
well, you know, to new viewers or listeners, I will give you a context. I was brought up without God.
Yeah.
And no big deal. I mean, my mother was not a militant atheist. She was militant about other things, but we simply didn't have God. You know, and if anything, I was dragged off at the age of 4 to humanist lectures, not understanding a word of it, at the Brooklyn Society for Ethical Culture in New York. So if I have any religious context, which is a non-religious context, it's that. And so to me, the whole concept of a devil proves there's no God.
The whole concept of a devil proves there's no God. Please elaborate. I feel like I don't want to connect these dots for you.
Okay, very simple. It's very simple. God is omnipotent, right?
Yes.
He's the boss of everything.
Boss of.
If he's the boss of everything, he's not going to tolerate the devil at all. He's going to strike him down with a thunderbolt. That's going to be the end of the whole damn thing.
With a lightning bolt.
Yes.
So, you know.
Of course, if he really is omnipotent, there won't be any devil to begin with because he won't allow it.
Now, Scott, so, you might be aware of the apologetic of necessary evil. Have you heard of that before?
Mm-hmm.
How would you respond to George's statement?
Right. So if I was to put my Christian hat on and argue about it, I would say that in order to have free will and to show love, there has to be some opposite to work from. So, you know, if we only have the option to do good things and live a pleasurable life and all of that, then there's no free will. It's like if there's nothing but evil, then there's no chance to do good. Then God's made it impossible to do good. You have no free will. You're stuck into that mode of you're either have no, you have only the possibility to do good, choose good things, worship God, or you have the option to not worship God and never do good things. So either way, so you need a balance. You need a little evil and a little good in order to work from. You need some kind of contrast. That's the apologetic there.
And so my response on top of that would be, you're the boss of everything. There's no justification of, well, there needs to be a balance. It's like, no, because you have the choice when you're making the universe of saying, nah, there doesn't need to be this kind of balance. It could be this kind of balance where there's no needless suffering, where there's nobody getting hurt, where there is no evil. I, as the boss of everything, had the opportunity to make that, yet I chose this particular system. And so then the next level of apologetic would be like, well, you just don't know because you're an invaluable human being. And that's very frustrating as an argument. But I can't. Hey, George, what's up? Go for it.
Well, I had something else to say, too. But our topic is why worship?
Yeah.
And, you know, often I realize that I'm using words and I need to go back to the dictionary and find out what this word really means.
And how it's used.
Yeah. And so what do we mean by worship?
We can handle that in the second half because we're almost ready to cut into the break. Though I do want to say, I think just before we round out on this topic, I am totally fine with there being good and evil, as Scott has outlined in the Christian apologetic. Like, there, if there's a necessary evil and a necessary good for that balance to occur, I can, though, by reading the Bible, clearly see that God is not the good one.
Yeah, right.
And if I had to make the assessment of, like, which of these two characters are the most evil, there are literal stories where it's the Satan going up and being like, hey, you called me up to heaven, what's going on? It's like God's like, hey, check it out. We're gonna play a prank on this guy. We're gonna destroy his entire family. I'm gonna destroy all of his livestock. I'm gonna kill all his wives. And he's gonna totally not curse me. He's gonna be like, oh yeah, I love you so much, God. Check this out. And devil's like, oh my gosh, what's going on here? you won, God. Good job. It's like, yeah, now I'm just going to give them some new people. Like, there's your new family. All right, we're done. Go back to hell. I'm like, that is such the evil guy. That's the evil one. That's the evil one. Just my book. And yet.
Can I tell a story?
Well, we're
you can
at the
in the
break.
Second half.
Yeah.
Okay, half, I'll do half, that. Sure. Yeah.
Larry, sorry for going long.
That's okay. This is the Digital Freethought Radio Hour on WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM here in Knoxville, Tennessee. We'll be right back after this short break.
Shake the hand of my imaginary friend. See the trouble he gets in can't be traced back to me. Oh, he can pretend at the slightest of his whim. He has the power to suspend all rules of morality. And when he gets angry, he can make the lightning strike. He can help me win the fight with his power. Yes, he speaks through me, and it's always positive, 'cause I can just ask for forgiveness and it's over. So you can't put the blame on me. I'm doing what God said.
president of the United States. Do you think it's appropriate to say something like that? Or
I'm not saying anything. What I'm doing is repeating what God is saying.
In the name of the one who made us all, I will hide behind these walls from my enemies. By the power bestowed from up above, I will conquer you because it is my destiny.
Hello and welcome back to the second half of the Digital Freethought Radio Hour. I'm Dotter 5, and we're on WOZO Radio, 103.9 LPFM here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Today is Sunday morning, June 13th, 2021. Now let's talk about the Atheist Society of Knoxville, or ASK. Founded in 2002, we're in our 19th year. ASK has over 1,000 members, and we have weekly meetings, both on Zoom and in person. The person meeting takes place at Barley's Tap Room and Pizzeria in the Old City every Tuesday evening after work and goes until about 8 o'clock. You'll also find us on Facebook, meetup.com, or just go to KnoxvilleAtheist.org or just Google Knoxville Atheist. It's just that simple. Also, RET, the Rationalists of East Tennessee, can be found at rationalist.org. By the way, if you don't live in Knoxville, you should still go to Meetup and search for an atheist group in your town. Don't find one. Start one. That's right. Wombat, where you want to pick up?
Actually, we're going to start with George since he wanted to tell a story in the first half of the show. Our topic of the show today is why worship? What do you get out of it? Why you ask for it? What's the value? What's the deal with worship? Anyway, George Brown, what's your story?
Well, this is my simple worship story. You got to understand that to me, the whole concept of religions is just absurd. And this is how I've lived my life. What in the hell are these people doing? Why are they doing it? So, but you see, the way I'm wired, I have a hard time doing arithmetic. I have always had difficulty doing math and learning certain things in the classroom. So I was in high school, and I was having a hard time with whatever math I was supposed to be doing. It just doesn't work for me. And I was walking down Flatbush Avenue in Brooklyn. Flatbush Avenue, yeah. It's a real street. And going to the subway or something. And there was a man on the sidewalk with a little table, and he had these little tiny Bibles. And there was a sign that said, "Free Bible to any Jew who will promise to read it." I said, "I'll do that." Now, these were shirt pocket size Bibles.
Were they like just the New Testament?
Yeah, they were the Gideon Bibles, basically.
I think it was the whole thing. The whole thing, Larry.
Wow. Your breast pocket?
Yeah, real thin paper. And I thought,
yeah,
I'm flunking math. I'm desperate.
Are you sure he's selling you Bibles and not astigmatism?
Well, so I got this Bible, and I start opening it up. I think I'll pray to the Bible, and maybe I'll pass math, you know. And so I prayed. I'm sorry, guys. Well, anyway, I prayed and nothing happened, you know. And so that's the sum total of my worship. I'm done. I don't even know where I put that little Bible, but that's the end of my story.
John Richards, what do you got?
Well, we've been talking about worship, and you mentioned misogyny, I think.
Yes.
And it struck me that worship is almost entirely a male thing, isn't it? It's very sexist.
Oh, geez. We in the grand scheme of things, a man only ever asked for worship. So,
there are plenty of Roman gods that are goddesses.
Like
Diana and Aphrodite and Freya. Absolutely. Freya, I think, was Norse. But there are a lot of them in the multi-god.
But like, if you go even to that tier of gods, if you go into like Norse gods, it's like King Odin who's like, and telling all the other gods, "I'm the boss. I'm the end game god. Like, you can ask for good weather from this person, but I get the final say." So, like, there is that misogyny layer. Sorry, John, but what were you going for?
Well, since we've gone back to the Roman gods, my favorite is the female god that was responsible for keeping Rome's sewers flowing. She was well worth worshipping. I'm trying to think of her name. It'll come to me later.
Okay. But okay.
The point I wanted to make, it's Roman Catholicism that sort of breaks this rule of worship being for men, because the Catholics tend to worship the Madonna quite a lot.
Jesus'
mum. And there's an interesting story about a Madonna statue, which you may or may not have heard, which suddenly started to weep tears from its eyes.
Yeah.
And this became a tourist attraction. Lots of people came along to worship the weeping Madonna. And, you know, stalls were set up to sell them food and drink and so on. It became a very profitable enterprise. And then one day, somebody was called in to do a plumbing job in the church behind the statue, and it was discovered that the toilet was leaking and the tears were coming from there.
Yeah, well, that's funny. Well, you know, one of my elders told me the real reason the statue was weeping was because she was sad that people were worshiping her and not God.
Oh, is that the story?
that's the real reason, I was told.
I'm also going to throw this out too. I don't like the concept of the Madonna worship, because they don't worship. They're not worshiping a woman for being a woman, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it is very much. Yep. Mary is a virgin. Mary is quiet. Mm-hmm. Mary is obedient. Mary did what God told her to do. Mary followed orders, and Mary gave birth, and that's good all
to a man.
Virtues that we to a man, to yes. the best man, and had a son. And that's all the virtues we bestow on the opposite sex. Yeah, and true. That's it. We don't care about what she liked, her favorite music, issues she had politically, when she menstruated. Like, none of that matters. It's like, you're obedient, you're quiet, you gave birth, and you're a virgin. And you're the best version of a woman possible. And in my head, that's like such a pigeonholing of a character of what a woman can be. And so when I see that, it's like, I don't see that as a healthy... I don't see worship as healthy anyway, but I also don't see that as a good target. I just see that as another misogynistic example of like, hey, wouldn't it be great if all women that gave birth? No, that's the most perfect woman possible. It's like, really? That's such a small aspect of it. But I was trying to make an analogy in my head while we were thinking about this, but I would be like, you know, qualifying Mary as as like the best woman is like qualifying Mickey Mouse as the best black character on TV. And it's just like, they're like so many layers and questions apart from each other. It's like, how are you even close? Like, well, he's got mostly a black face. He's got the big black ears and stuff. Like that's not even close to it. Anyway, George, thank you for that story.
Like I said, it didn't work, you know.
I still can't
do arithmetic. All I have to do is say praise Jesus for calculators.
Yeah, so I'm going to go back to another story with Satan too. Like, the whole idea of Satan was that he was sent to hell, but he was more beautiful than God, and God got upset about that, or essentially, right? Is that the story? Correct me if I'm wrong. Feel free to correct me if I'm wrong. But essentially, it was a sense of vanity. And God's major plan of like, hey, you know, no one can think they're better than me, and I'm at least cuter than you, right? I wear this beard better than you wear that beard, right?
It goes back to, what do we mean by worship? Mm. And, you know, when you look at the Bible, what did they mean by worship? And it was very, very much a vain type of concept, because the other word for worship, it was synonymous with the word worship in the Bible, was glory, glorification. So like 1 Corinthians, I think it is 10:31 or whatever. So whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, give all glory to God. Do it all for the glory of God. And so God is a jealous God, and he doesn't want you giving that glory or worship to other symbols, you know, because he's jealous. He wants all that to himself, you know, his vain.
And I feel like it's more of like insecurity. Like, if you told me, hey, plot twist, the God that we've been worshiping, or God of Christianity, is actually the God of insecurity this whole time, I'd be like,
It makes sense.
It makes a lot of sense. And someone just gave him the keys, and next thing you know, he's just turning all the keys and be like, "Worship me, or I'm flooding this, or I'm burning this village, or I'm turning this lady into salt." Or I'm it was like, "Wait, did you say turn a lady into salt? I'm turning a lady into salt. I like salt." I'm like, okay, he got the salt key, guys. He has all the keys. What are we gonna do? Just worship him. What value? Okay, let's try to steel man this the best that we can then. What value could a being possibly get from being worshipped? John, I'll throw this to you first. What possible value is there in being worshipped?
Ooh, I don't know. An inflated ego, maybe?
Okay. Yeah. I imagine you have to have, if God's powers were ego-based, like he had to have a certain impression of himself to be able to do the things that he does.
Yeah.
I can see the value in that. Like, there's some weird twist in there. What do you think?
The trouble is, it sort of assumes that he's a bit neurotic and needs to have an inflated ego to be constantly massaged.
Mm.
Especially right. if he punishes those who don't worship him.
Yes, indeed. Yes.
Yeah. Way, sounds like a certain politician I know of.
Sounds like several.
Yeah.
Well, there is a Christian apologetic for it, though.
Oh, talk to us.
Mm-hmm. So the Christian apologetic for why should God be worshipped? And they will say, because what is entailed in worshiping God is doing God's will. And what God's will entails is treating others with love, with respect, with loving your wife as you love yourself. You know, all of these, you know, supposed virtues and things like that. So it's for our own good that we worship God.
Larry, that's the perfect jump off to you. How would you respond to, it's for your own good to worship God? That's the benefit.
I'd say I don't understand the correlation. Why is it good for me? How is it good for me?
Or I can see the correlation, but you have not demonstrated the causation for me. Like, I can see that you're connecting dots, but one's not causing the other. I can be good to my wife. I can be a good person without worshiping God. And so this is just an extra step that's not needed. Though you can correlate them, there's no cause showing that doing this makes the other one happen.
There is a causation in the apologetic, though.
Okay.
And that's because the reward for doing that is going to heaven. So anyways, and John, staying out of hell.
John, what do you got?
Well, I've remembered the name of the Roman goddess who looked after the sewers.
It's this thing again. Okay, yeah.
It's Cloacina. She's well worth worshiping. You don't
Cloacina. There's a bacteria strain named after her. Is that really her name?
Yeah, it was. Yeah. Very often we use Roman and Greek words to name things in biology, don't we?
Wow. Well, there is a that's like shining a light and like 2 years of my biochemistry classes at once.
Wow.
I'm like, yeah. It's like realizing Monday's named after the moon and Sunday's named after the sun. You're like, the whole time? Yeah.
But it sounds to me like a brand of cookies. Cloacina.
Cloacina, yeah. I wanted to ask Scott, what's the difference between apologetics and spin?
Ooh. Yeah. There's no difference. I always like to put it this way, and this is pretty sarcastic, but I think apologetics exists to make believers not feel stupid.
Oh, man, that's the best quote for today. Scott, you got the best quote for today. You got to put that in the song. If you played an entire electronic set and end on that phrase, apologetics exists so Christians don't think they're stupid.
That's like so that, mean.
Not just, like, not just Christians,
so
though.
My face is frying. Yeah. It's so good.
Religious.
Religious. Yeah, there's in general.
I feel like apologetics also exists for people to have an excuse not to think about what they believe, because we know the result of what happens when you do that. People become more skeptical. And it tends to be the case that the more skeptical you are, the further away you run from religion. And people don't like that. So what's the best thing that they can do is they can say, oh, these answers have already been solved. They're in a book or they're in a YouTube video. You don't have to see the YouTube video. They exist. So just keep doing what you're doing. And if you ever do want to see them, you can. And you can see them and you can read them. And they feel good. They feel like they make sense. But they're not engaging you to think about the process of how they came up with that conclusion. They're just an explanation, not an answer. Well, There's just an answer, not an explanation. George, take yourself off mute. Come back.
Yes. You know, I've been thinking about this a lot. To me, living here in the Bible Belt is a very confusing experience. I think that what is at the root of this is an emotional thing. People are comforted by the familiar.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're raised with this belief system, they want to keep on returning to it. It's a source of comfort.
George, I have an even more extreme version of that. I wouldn't even say people are comforted by the familiar. I'd say they're afraid of change. I would say that.
Absolutely. It's the opposite. The change is frightening. Mm. You
and
know?
It's also guaranteed. And it's,
yeah. What's that?
It's also guaranteed. The one thing that we will constantly have is change. Yes.
Yeah. That's crazy, too. Life is scary, basically.
The tendency to resist change is because it's comforting to know how everything works. And once things change, we don't know. We're in a situation of doubt once more. And this is why, in my mind, the religious tend to be in alignment with conservatism. They don't, politically, they don't want change. Yeah.
Can you say more about that? I'm curious.
Yeah.
Well, in the States, it's the Republican Party, isn't it, that is the most evangelical?
Yep. But it wasn't always that way, right?
No.
Like, it wasn't that not. Only until like 1960s and anti-drugs, Nixon era, that it suddenly became, we're going to need the South on our side, so let's become really religious.
Yes. It's not the same Republican Party it was way back at all.
No. But yeah, I hear what you're saying. Yeah, now it's not even the same poverty it was 8 years ago, right? Like it's devastating to see what's going on. But I mean, conservatism in my head is sort of a harken back to traditionalism, sort of like old people have figured out the problems for us. We just have to basically do what they do. You don't have to think about it. Just do what they're doing. Just stay on this course and it's okay.
Yes. Well, that's another tendency, isn't it? The appeal to authority.
Yes.
We like authority. We like a hierarchy. We like a big God at the top.
Who's this we that you're talking about?
Humanity. who is the most worship worthy, the big one at the top.
Dang, general humanity for possibly even making that true. It's probably the case. Yeah, I hear what you're saying. Though it still comes back to the main question of like, why does worship have to be an option? I would love, and I've talked about this before, there's versions of God on a show called Chicken Soup for the Soul or PAX or something like that. There was a show called Chicken Soup for the Soul where it was not so much, it was very much an interventionist God, but it wasn't like in your face, you have to do what I want. It's more of like, you got a flat tire. Well, because, you know, you were nice to people, those people have found you on the road and came to help you fix your tire up again. And it was just through your own machinations of putting good in the world that good came and helped you out so that you can continue on your way. And like, that would be an episode of Chicken Soup for the Soul. It wouldn't even be like a God character. It would just be like wholesome, good things that can come about through being, you know, an uplifting, inspiring person in the world. And I was like, if you told me that in order to make this work, there was a God pulling levers and keeping track of like good values and being like, okay, put in this good, we're now cashing this good, now good things are going to happen. I'd be like, okay, at least that God is interventionist, is working in people's lives in a benevolent way and isn't asking to be worshiped. Like that in my book would be like, okay, this is the benevolent God that I've been always hearing about. But that is not the character that's in the Bible.
Oh.
And it still doesn't explain the value of worship even as a concept, because it seems like he would be just as capable of using his supernatural powers to help whether we worship or don't worship. And I'm brought back, and I'll use this as my final point. There's a philosopher who says basically, I don't even want to misquote him because I don't know who it was, but essentially there's, if I don't worship, period, and I am punished for it by a God that wanted to be worshipped, that wasn't the God that I wanted to worship in the first place, right? And if I end up not worshiping anybody and the God's like, yeah, you're free to go to the good place, I'd be like, oh, cool. Awesome. Because that is the kind of God that I would want to be with, is one that wouldn't demand worship from me in the first place. Seems like it's such a extreme thing to ask for. Scott, what is the thing that you got closest to worshiping?
You mean in life in general?
Yeah, even if it's a concept, what was the thing that you've gotten close to worshiping the most?
Well, I used to be Jehovah's Witness, so I definitely used to worship that religion. But
that's true.
You mean
that's
outside true. Of that?
No, I guess nowadays, what's the thing that you
nowadays,
even if it's conceptually, even if it's momentary,
maybe skepticism. Maybe I worship that. I think it can be. It can almost be, and I notice a tendency in myself to where I've become so comfortable in embracing of not knowing things and being skeptical about things that I almost want to not know things and want to not and be skeptical about things. Like, just there's a side of, and I have to keep that in check. Like, I have to always watch it, because I might be acting on cognitive bias just like anybody else. So, but yeah, I've seen myself go down that road.
Nice. And I wouldn't even say you worship it. I just say, like, that's the thing that you can get a lot of, I would say, positive returns from when you invest time into it. So that's a good trade-off. John, same question to you. What's the thing that you found that you not worship, but get as close to possible? And it can be a thing, a person, that, even if it's temporary, like a good song that you heard for like 3 minutes and you're like, now I'm going to go off to the next thing. What was like something where you were like, that was it.
Eric Clapton.
I'd love Eric Clapton. I'm surprised you said him. Isn't he American?
No, he's British. Yes.
Oh, okay. He sings like he's American, and that's a conversation for another time.
Well, we all do, don't we?
Okay.
I'd love to be able to play the guitar like him. He used to be known as God of the guitar many years ago.
Yep. Yeah, I aspire to his skill as well, yes.
Yeah, but it's worship is an anathema to me, because I'm a retired science teacher, and we don't have any respect in science. We don't have any respect for people at all. We have respect for ideas, and we're willing to challenge any person, no matter how high up the hierarchy,
absolutely,
if we think their ideas are faulty.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And that's how you know science works, because it's constantly just
prove indeed.
It. I don't believe it. No, so no.
Worship is not part of my oeuvre.
So it does sound like you have an appreciation for the scientific method, if anything. Like, along with Eric Clapton, scientific method is also like, I will go to bat for this. I'll fight for this.
Yes,
I'm in the same boat. If there was a conference where it's like, we're going to decide whether or not, I'll tell you quickly, when I went to Kentucky, I went to the textbooks center to see what the University of Textbooks had said about biology, just as a lark. And none of them were good in terms of describing evolution. They were either a three paragraph thing in a big old textbook, or literally had words like capital C creator made blocks, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And I'm like, this is startling to see this in a science textbook.
Well, that's Kentucky, isn't it? Yeah.
Oh, but it. Kentucky's out of the South, I think. I feel like it's just, help me out. I don't know. It depresses me either way. But yeah.
The other thing I worship will be freedom of speech. I think anybody should be able to express themselves without being censored.
We can talk about that. I feel like censorship, I feel like words do have the capability of hurting in ways that we may not even anticipate, especially with libel or Twitter. Like, it's very easy to witch hunt or kill people in like a public sense. And if we don't have means of censoring that or observing that or controlling that to some extent, we may have something like a president who will tell a bunch of people to go into the Capitol building and kill people, or the vice president. And like
a news source like Fox News.
Yeah. Like, if there was ever a demonstration of why censorship is useful, it's that. Like, that, and that should be like not something that's up to one CEO. It should be like a systematic, we don't accept that block that, as we as a society determine that. George Brown, sort of like a final thought section. What's the thing that you love the most?
Well, I think if there was a master race in the universe that came back to Earth and said, gee, we've overlooked these people for so long. Should we let them live or should we just bomb the hell out of this place as a failure? And what do they have that's worthy of saving? They make wars. They kill each other all the time, you know. And so the one thing that we have that is worthy is art, our arts. And to me, of course, the art that I know the most is music. So who do I worship in music? Bach, Pachelbel, Palestrina, Charlie Parker, on some days, Joni Mitchell and James Taylor.
Nice.
So expression through art, I think that saves us. It saves me.
Saves you, expression through art. Powerful statement, George Brown. Larry, thing you love the most, don't say trolling on the internet.
Truth. You know, I did worship golf for about 20 years.
Hey, that's not bad. I was saying, if you get close to worshiping truth, you're one third of the way of worshiping Superman, because he's truth, justice, and the American
way. There you go.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good. Yeah. Yeah,
well, I don't know about the American way anymore. It's kind of come into question with all that's going on here, especially with the right being so gone, far gone.
So I will say this too, just as a maybe as a my last inspiring pick me up. But the problems that have been going on are not new in America. And they are finally getting to the reckonance or the radio stations that everybody's listening to. And because everyone's groaning at the same time, and it's not just, you know, a group of minorities that are groaning anymore, that is a good thing. When everyone's like, oh my gosh, look at this problem, that's so much better than that one person in the room who has the problem being like, this is a big problem, guys, and everyone not listening to that person anymore. So it seems like now more people are aware of things that we need.
What do you mean groaning, Paleface?
Oh, that's right. I think we're getting close to the end of the show. Larry, Scott, where can we find your stuff at? Where's your Bandcamp?
Oh, yeah. Dubshine.bandcamp.com.
Sweet. John Richards, something alliance. There's some sort of alliance out there with a bunch of atheists. It's like a atheist alliance of some sort. What's going on out there?
Well, I'm no longer part of that, so you're asking the wrong person. I resigned
from that
post back in January now.
Okay.
But so I've now got Free Thought Productions, which is my YouTube channel, and you've been on it.
Yeah.
And Eric's been on it. And I've also got Dredd coming on Saturday. He's going to spend an hour with me chatting about things.
Nice.
And anybody else who'd like to come on would be welcome.
Sweet. And I have no problem double dipping on that show. Just send me an invite. You can find me on Let's Chat YouTube. Larry, why don't you take us out?
Okay. My own content is found at digitalfreethought.com. Be sure to click on the blog button for our radio show archives, atheist songs, and many articles on the subject of atheism. My YouTube channel can be found by just searching for Larry Rhodes or Doubter 5. My book, Atheism, What's It All About, is available on Amazon. If you have questions for the show, you can send them to askanatheist@knoxvilleatheist.org, and we'll answer them on future shows. If you're having trouble leaving religious beliefs behind, you can find help at recoveringfromreligion.org. And if you're watching this on YouTube, be sure to like and subscribe. This has been the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour for another week. Remember, everybody is going to somebody else's hell. The time to worry about it is when they prove that heavens and hells and souls are real. Until then, don't sweat it. Enjoy your life. And we'll see you next Wednesday. Say bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, everyone.